This is Phil Farron, and I am driving home. It's Thursday today. It is episode 387. All is well. I don't think I'm coming in tomorrow, unless something goes bad, which I hope it doesn't, because I have a dentist appointment tomorrow. Yay, I get to have my teeth cleaned tomorrow. And I am not saying yay sarcastically. I love having my teeth cleaned. Usually everything's fine. I'm fairly religious about taking care of my teeth and my gums and all that kind of stuff, and rinsing and blah, 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 blah. So usually there is no problem, and it's just a cleaning, but it means that I get the gunk from the walnuts and from the coffee and all that stuff taken off my teeth, and I'm just so happy when we do that. So, which is good, because we've got a big meeting coming up on Wednesday. At least I think I'm in a big meeting coming up on Wednesday to discuss this K2 purchase at my major client, and I'll probably be doing a little presentation. And I always like to do presentations with my teeth clean. I just, you know, you feel better. Last time I did a big presentation, I had just had my teeth whitened, which I'm still not sure how I feel about it. I mean, I did have to... It not only cost money, which it wasn't very much money at all, because my dentist likes me. Wasn't really much money at all. But it made my... I had three sessions, and every time I had a session, it made my teeth hurt for like a day. So, you know, I felt like that was my penance for being vain. but I have long since blown through that whitening. There's, you know, not time to get them whitened now for this presentation, and I don't really think I need it. So, maybe if someday I become a big-time, real-time author, I'll have to get my teeth cleaned and whitened regularly. But until then, my heart will go on singing. So anyways, it's been a good week on the work front. Everything's been puttering along. Been working on more pieces of this expert system that I'm building, and that all seems to be going fine. What else? Not much else on work. As far as writing goes, I think I have the book roughed in. I have more work to do, certainly more work to do, in terms of reading and editing and pulling everything together and polishing. That'll happen over the next 2 weeks, though. And hopefully I can get it done in 2 weeks. The book is actually long. I was afraid it was going to come in long. It's actually long. I really wanted it to come in somewhere around 147,000 words, 145,000 words, and it's actually 152 or 155, 154, somewhere in there. So, I still have to do my read-through, and there's some of that that's gonna, I know I need to expand some moments, so, you know, I just need to get in there, expand the moments, and just take it what it is. So, it's probably going to be about 25 pages longer in final set pages, maybe 30 pages longer than I really like to have them. But on the other hand, you know, it's fine. It's just pretty tough to always land things exactly where you want to land them, especially when you have very little plan going into it exactly what's happening. You're just finding it out as you go. And this one especially, because it was basically three books in one. and the story was told linearly, and so who knows? When I get reading through it, I may figure out that there's our friends, but he's not looking at me. His name's Jeremy. Jeremy and Shekinah. But anyways, who knows? When I get reading through it, I may find some pieces that I can subtract out, although I don't think I will. I just don't think I will. So that's fine. It's fine. Everything's fine. All is well with the family. This is the big weekend. Amber is going to move in this weekend. Yay. So Liz and Alan found a different car, and so she has their car. They gifted it to her, their old car. So that's good. She's got that. So we'll be doing a little moving in. This, I think she's got everything consolidated down. She's going to bring her stuff out, you know, no furniture or anything like that, out to the house. And she's ready-made to move in there you know, bring her little doggy. The big challenge there is going to be getting her, our cats, used to her dog. So we'll see how this goes. I think it'll be fine. I think it's going to take a couple of weeks. But I think it'll be fine. Lynette's hoping it'll be fine, but I think it'll be fine. Worst case scenario, we have to keep them separated. You know, so, I mean, that's worst case scenario. But I don't think that's going to be the case. I think it's just going to take a couple of weeks and maybe a month. And then, you know, eventually it'll be fine. So, but I think eventually it's going to be fine. Annette is really going to like having a little doggy back in the house again, because she misses having a dog in the house. So we'll get it all figured out. We are at the beginning of a great adventure here. So it'll be interesting to see how it all works out, but I'm sure it will work out. Is there anything else? I don't think so. I'm doing pretty well on the cover for the new book. I've got one spot of the color that's actually a detail. My elbow keeps rubbing against some film that was put on my windows long time ago, over 10 years ago, to kind of cut down on the heat, but it's loose. So that's what that sound is. If you hear that, it's the film that's loose, and then my arm keeps bumping it. Anyways, so cover. I still have one little spot on the cover that I'm trying to get worked out. This is Jack or Jill, Jack and Jill, and I really need to talk to my daughter when I get home and make sure she knows that the cover shoot is coming in about 3 or 4 weeks. We got to find some Jack and Jill outfits for the kids, because both of the grandkids are on this cover. So it'll be fun. I've pretty much got everything worked out except that one detail spot. I don't know if there needs to be out. I think I'd like to have a water fountain there, but it's building the thing. It's building up to the waterfall, making the waterfall happen. I just got to find the right piece to put in there, but I will. I just got to go scour around some more and look for interesting waterfall patterns. It'll be fine. It'll work out. One way or another, it'll work out. Okay, so I had read an article several weeks ago. And I'm always looking for articles from the viewpoint of, you know, the other side of the gender fence. And just to help me understand better, to write better characters, to absorb mindsets. And so my purpose in reading this article is really kind of twofold. To hear experience, understanding that experiences for human are not uniform. They always have unique twists and turns on them. But to then see how this person's experiences then lead them to the concepts that they carry about in their worldview, that's a very interesting thing to me. And so I'm always interested in reading about this. And so there was an article by the author of a book called Sex Object. Her name is Jessica Valenti. And this Sex Object is a memoir where she explores how daily assaults from inappropriate hugs to subway groping affect women. And so I thought, well, okay, let's see what this is. And the title of the article was, sorry for some of the language in this podcast. Title of the article was, Sex Object Author Talks About Penises, Trauma, and Everyday Sexism. So she obviously has a very specific experience, and I do not doubt that any of the things that she talks about in her experience have occurred. All I can say is I am saddened by her experiences, and I'm saddened by the conclusion that she has come to in her experiences. But all of us have a right as human beings to come to whatever conclusions we wish to come to based on our experiences. So the article starts off by talking about, since she's a feminist, there are internet trolls that are just trying to stir up emotions, and so they'll send her messages like, get back in the kitchen and make me dinner, or they'll threaten her life for writing about feminism. And I have no doubt that these things occur, because there's a whole lot of people out there who are idiots. Specifically, there's a whole lot of guys who are idiots. And there are a whole lot of guys out there who are actually afraid of women and afraid of the attraction that they feel for women, because it's such a powerful force in their life. And in fact, I think that homophobia can easily be explained by men's fear that if something feminine appears before them, that they will be drawn to that, even if that feminine thing is a man. And that's why you get these angry, violent reactions, because men are afraid of the attraction. They're afraid of the lust that is within them. And so part of that fear is they react badly to it. Part of their reacting badly is just because lust blinds. And it's just a bad deal. There are men in the world who are idiots. And there's a whole lot of guys that are just blind to what they're doing. And they're just foolish. And they allow their lust to convince them that women exist for nothing more than tools to help them control their sperm count, which is stupid, but nonetheless exists. So part of Valenti's book is relating the experiences that have happened to her apparently growing up in New York City. When she has had catcalls all her life. And again, sorry for the language. When she has had a stranger ejaculate into the back pocket of her jeans on a crowded subway. When she, as 12 years old, riding the subway, had a man in a business suit remove one of her headphones and whisper, "Take care of your titties for me." 12 years old. Now, obviously, all of this stuff is completely inappropriate. But out of all that stuff, in her latest work, she purports to examine the way a lifetime of daily run-ins with sexism has sabotaged pieces of herself. And the introductory question she poses is, who would I be if I didn't live in a world that hates women? Now, that's a fairly provocative statement. And the writer of the article goes on to say the question isn't quite rhetorical, but she doesn't answer it either. So whether or not Valenti actually believes that the world hates women or not, or whether she's simply using it for shock value so that people will talk about her book and she will sell more copies, I have no idea. But I do not doubt in any way that all of the things that she relates have happened to her. And I do not diminish those experiences in any way, because men can be idiots. Not all men, but men can be idiots. And sexual harassment is a terrible thing. Now, what she says is that these encounters with sexism constantly disrupt daily routines and leave women baffled and nauseated. Quote, we have to walk through the rest of our day knowing that our discomfort gave someone a hard-on, says Valenti. This idea that objectification can permanently, and worse, covertly alter a woman's personhood is unnerving, though not unbelievable. The book, Sex Object, is full of scenes that are entirely recognizable to young women unsure how to handle other people's reactions to their sexuality. It is a pillar of solidarity for women who experience what Valenti refers to as the cumulative effects of sexism. Throughout the memoir, Valenti is so inundated with discomfort and fear during her daily interactions with men that she finds herself subconsciously dissociating from her physical body, a common coping mechanism for victims of trauma. Quote, she says, of course you're going to disconnect. When people dehumanize you, it becomes easier for you to dehumanize yourself. So she dedicates her book, Sex Object, to her 5-year-old daughter with the hope that it provides her with the vocabulary that Valenti lacked as a young woman and that so many young women lack to articulate the effects of everyday sexism. Quote, given that all women are expected to live with the leers that start when we've barely begun puberty, the harassment and the violence we survive or are constantly on guard for, I can't help but wonder what it has done to all of us, she says. Not just to know how women experience the world, but how we experience ourselves. And she goes on to say how little things can stack on top of each other, and how that on crowded train cars she didn't see dicks, she said, but I felt them. About how that she would, you know, on her way to school, try to base whether or not she was going to be sexually harassed by the number of people who are on the train. And she likens it to a kind of PTSD or obsessive compulsive disorders, you know, that the effects of these things can be. And I absolutely agree. You know, how do women describe the impact of violence that is so and daily entwined that Valentis likens it to the air you breathe. Wait. So the article actually says PTSD, depression, obsessive compulsive disorder, these are all concrete, distinguishable conditions with symptoms, diagnosis, and treatment plans. But how do women, yeah, there you go, that's better. But how do women describe the impact of violence so intertwined with daily life that Valenti likens it to the air you breathe? And while she recognizes that some questions are too complex for her to answer. Wait, my wife just told me that she picked up the mail. Too complex to answer in 200 pages, it doesn't stop her from asking them. What diagnosis do you give to the shaking hands after you get after a stranger whispers pussy in your ear on the way to work? And here's, you know, here's something that made me kind of perk up my ears when I read it. Following Sex Objects publication, Valenti said she received an influx of emails from men apologizing for the crude behaviors of their sex. But she found these messages both unnecessary and unproductive. Even the most understanding men, quote, don't necessarily realize the unrelentingness of it, says Valenti. She believes that the most constructive way for men to combat sexism is perhaps the most simple, giving women the space to speak. Quote, I think the number one thing men can do is just believe women, Valenti says. If a woman says this happened or this was sexist, just listen to her and believe that and trust that. So obviously in her life, I'm backing into my garage. Obviously in her life and in the experiences of the people she has been around, there have been men being idiots, not only in the way they've treated women, but also after being idiots in that way, then doing things, oh, well, that's nothing, you know, that didn't mean anything, even more idiots when she tried to talk to them about it. So hopefully I am not that. But the thing that struck me about this whole structure is really the sadness. The sadness of this situation that she either believes or is willing to claim that she believes that the world hates women. When I think what's going on is a whole lot more complex than that. It's not that it's not terrible, it is terrible, but it's a whole lot more complex than that. And that's the reason you can't answer the question in 200 pages. Because there's a whole bunch of stuff that stacks on top of each other. So, in the process of this, you know, obviously I'm a man, so I've got my own perspective on this. I thought, I need to find a woman's perspective. So I called my daughter. Because my daughter's experience is somewhat unique from the woman's side. And I am not bringing up my daughter's experience so that I can say, see, Valenti is wrong. She's not wrong from her experience and from her conclusions. I could understand very easily how she would come to the conclusion that the world hates women. I just find that sad. And I asked my daughter, I said, so would you, in your experience, I'm going to roll down the windows because it's starting to get a little warm in the car. Would you, in your experience, say that you have come to a belief that the world hates women? And she paused because she wanted to speak accurately. And she said, no, she said, but I haven't had a lot of bad experiences. And one of the reasons that she hasn't had a lot of bad experience is because she does not live in a place like New York City where you have a high concentration of people and you have a high concentration of people who are riding the subway buried down underground that is available for anybody to ride on. And you're going to get a whole mix of people in there, and you're going to greatly increase your chances. That's not to say, let's not get into this. That's not to say that anyone who gets sexually harassed on the subway deserves to get sexually harassed. They don't. Period. Should never happen. Period. But there are enough idiot men in the world that if you put enough high enough concentration of them in the same place, and then you pack people like sardines into subways to try to move them in and out of the city twice a day, stuff is going to happen. And so, not growing up in New York City, growing up in a smaller town in the Midwest, my daughter was not really exposed to nearly this level. But there's also another dynamic going on. As my daughter and I talked about it, and I said, so your experience as a woman, and she kind of paused at one point, and she said, you know, growing up, she said, I never really thought of myself first as a woman. And I said, oh, that's very interesting. She said, yeah, she said, I think, first of all, I thought of myself as intelligent. Which is very interesting. And then we kind of veered off into a conversation, and I had to do quickly because I was trying to get to work, and I had gotten to work. And we started talking about sufficiency and the belief in yourself. And Lizzie has always had a very strong belief in herself. And so her approach to life has never been outward looking. When she did go through puberty, she has Hungarian grandparents, and she is big-breasted. There's no other way to describe her. And that was just something that was an attribute of her life. She was not embarrassed by it. She recognized it was an attribute, and she recognized that boys noticed that. And in high school, you know, word got back to her that she was identified both by her brains and by that particular characteristic. Oh yeah, she's the one with the brains and, you know, the breasts. And she said that really didn't bother her. She said because it's a statement of fact, and she knew that boys noticed that. There was one particular incident that could have been interpreted by her as sexual harassment when she was up in the engineering school. I won't go into a lot of details, but she was walking across campus, and a couple of guys walked by her, and when they walked by her, one under his breath, after he got a few steps beyond, made kind of an underhand, a low-toned kind of an exclamation about, you know, the size of her breasts. And I asked her this morning, I said, did you feel threatened when he said that? And she said, oh, no, I didn't feel threatened by that. You know, it's just kind of a statement of fact. I'm not trying to prove anything with my daughter's experience. But as I said at the beginning, there is this wide breadth of experience in the world. And I wish that we could just somehow wave a magic wand and just cut all this out and stop sexual harassment of women. But I think it's far more complex, the factors and the setups and the reactions and the effects that all of this stuff has, then can be answered with a simple question like, what would you know, women's lives be like if they didn't live in a world that hates women? The only other thing that occurs to me in the process of reading all this is that I think when you decide that you don't want to adjust your worldview at all from the different viewpoints that you might be involved with, as in, you know, well, having men say that they're apologizing, that's really not productive and it's not needed. You know, I don't know how to interpret that any other way than besides, look, I've made up my mind, and this is the way it is, and I feel very comfortable just lumping the whole world into this viewpoint, and all you can do is just really sit there and be quiet and listen. Now, I think it's very important to listen, and I think it's very important to not denigrate experience or the effect of experience. But if you've ever gotten to a place where you want to control the entire conversation and you don't want to receive any input from anyone that you do not deem worthy, I have a hard time seeing as that as anything but flesh. And according to my little world, flesh does not lead you to a place you want to be. This is Phil Farron, and I have made it home.